Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Amen. Today, we continue on with our series on the Ten Commandments, and we come to the seventh and tenth commandment, which both deal with justice. So, much like when we covered the sixth and ninth commandments, and we put them together in one sermon, we'll do the same with the seventh and the tenth, because like the sixth and ninth commandments, what the seventh forbids in action, the tenth forbids in thoughts. So, with the seventh and tenth commandments, we come now to the principles. First off, of course, like all the commandments, positive and negative aspect. The positive aspect of the seventh and tenth commandments is that man has a right to private ownership of property, of goods. It is necessary for us to be able to own things. You can't steal something if you can't own something. It kind of just goes without saying. But it's interesting when we see that principle. Man has a right to own property. It's a right given to us by God. Now, it is given to us because it is for the good of society as a whole. And when we think of that, we can oftentimes bring our minds to something so contrary to that to realize that the reason why it would fail is because it's contrary to nature. And that is that ideal of communism is something not only abhorrent because it opposes God and sets up the state as the head over all things, even over religion, but it is abhorrent to God because it goes against the very principles in nature, the natural principle of private ownership, and it forces it upon a multitude of people. So man has a right to own his own stuff, basically. He has a right to his own things. Which brings us, of course, then to the negative aspect of it, which is where we'll find most of our focus. The negative side, the negative aspect of that, what is forbidden, is the unlawful seizure and taking of another's property or the desire to do so. So let's see what is constituted under these commandments. So with the first and foremost, the most obvious is that of theft. Theft or stealing is the willful taking of property of another without permission or right to that property. So it is a theft or it is stealing of me if I see that another person has has a nice, a very nice car, and I decide, well, I want that car, and so I'm just going to take it from them, and I drive it home, and now it's quote unquote my car. I've stolen the car from them, and I have no right to do so. They didn't give me permission. They didn't lend it to me. They didn't give it as a gift to me. I just took it on my own volition. Theft can be either mortally sinful or at times venially sinful, dependent upon the amount taken. So that we know that taking items oftentimes varies in monetary worth, if you will. And if we take something that is considered to be a large amount, then it would be mortally sinful. What constitutes a large amount? It's hard to put an exact number on what a large amount is, but it is what, by common estimation, would be something that would be missed and something that would cause at least a little bit of hardship in another person. And when we measure that, it is measured by the common man. It's not okay for us to steal. If I knew Bill Gates and I stole, you know, $1,000 from Bill Gates, that, even though he probably wouldn't even recognize that it's gone, it still would be mortally sinful because in the common estimation of the common man, $1,000 would be greatly missed by somebody. It would cause some hardship in that way. And just because Bill Gates is really rich doesn't mean that I could just take large sums of money for a little bit of penalty to that, because that does damage to a society as a whole. It makes people think that there is less of something wrong in taking from the rich rather than taking from a common person. So it damages society as a whole. It makes society more susceptible to steal if that, morally speaking, was allowed as a lesser penalty to take from the rich. So, but in taking from the common man, what would be something that would be considered to be damaging? If I stole $100 from somebody, for example, that would be something that that person would more than likely miss, and that would be something that might cause a little bit of hardship. And so therefore we could say that that is probably a mortal sin to take something worth $100. Or if I took something worth $5, the common person is not really going to miss the $5. It's not going to cause them really any kind of grave inconvenience. It's still a violation of justice. It's still theft. It's still sinful. But to a lesser degree, it is now what we would consider to be venially sinful, because I only took $5, and probably an amount that the person would have given me had I asked for it, because I didn't have it. Also, in that, though, comes the point where that even stealing a small amount can, at times, be a mortal sin. So stealing a small amount, $5, say, from a poor person, you're walking down the street and there's someone begging on the side of the road, and you reach into their cup and you take the $5 bill out of there. Now you've taken $5 from somebody who might only have a little more than $5. And the harm is much greater done to that individual. And so therefore, what might have been venially sinful has now become mortally sinful because of that. Also, taking something that might not have much in the way of monetary means, but we know to have a lot of meaning in more of a sentimental or irreplaceable part in somebody's life, could also be mortally sinful. You know, a picture is not necessarily worth much of anything besides the paper that it is printed on, and maybe the frame. But if it's a picture that we know belongs to somebody, and it's the last memory that they had of a family member, then that would be something that would be more gravely sinful, because we've taken something of great sentimental value in that regard. Small amounts, while not in themselves necessarily mortally sinful, can at times become mortally sinful if coalescence is allowed to happen. What is coalescence? Coalescence is the building up over time, taking small increments that amounts to a large increment. At times, they can count as coalescing, as building up and counting together, and other times, not necessarily. So, for instance, it would not be considered a theft of a large amount if I stole $5 from my company here, and then several months later I took another $3, and then a few months later then I took, you know, $2, and eventually added up to, say, $150 in the long run, you know, over several years. Well, that's not going to be, those are just be individual small thefts because of the space that they're carried out over, and the fact that it hasn't really amounted to much. But it changes for several reasons. First off, if my goal is ultimately to steal something of a larger amount, then my intention is stealing the large amount and I'm just spacing it out, I am guilty of that larger theft. I remember growing up, there was a song by a country singer, sounds kind of funny, I don't even like country music, but Johnny Cash saying, "I stole it one piece at a time." And then the guy, he works at a car factory, and he takes one little piece of a car one day, and then later on he takes another little piece of a car. And over the entire time he's worked at that factory, he, in the end, upon his retirement, has all he needs for a car. And he would be guilty of stealing a car Just because he worked at a factory and only took a little bit over many, many years, his intention was not to have a spark plug. His intention was to have a car in the end. And so therefore, he's guilty of stealing a car. So that would be a coalescence of theft over time. His intention was to steal a larger item. Or it also can become mortal if the time frame is very short. If I steal $5 today, and then tomorrow I steal $3, and then another $6 at two different times during the day, and then I, you know, steal $15, and then I steal, and it all amounts to a very short period of time, then I would be guilty of the full amount in regards to theft. Also, I would be guilty of that full amount of theft, or the gravity of mortal sin for theft, if the damage done would be a grave damage. Usually, why we can say that, you know, something doesn't necessarily add up to be grave in a sinful nature if we've spread it out over a long period of time is because spreading it out that way has spread out the damage and it has not had the same type of impact. But if even spreading it out, I have still caused that unwanted damage to the person's well-being, then I'm still guilty of that sin in a grave way. One aspect that oftentimes gets confused under theft, that is not technically theft, and that often gets confessed as stealing, is something that comes from children. Children often come in and will confess, "I stole candy." What they mean to say is they took candy from the cupboard or from the home without asking permission to have it. Or I stole a snack from without asking permission. That's not stealing. That food in the house is common property for the people of the family. However, it is still wrong. It's still disobedience. But it shouldn't be confessed as stealing proper, because it already, you know, if we belong to a family and the food in the house is for the family, then we have a right to eat those things. But if the rules that are set down by one's parents are you can't eat candy unless you ask permission first, then it is the rules of the house that are broken, not an actual act of injustice. Another type of injustice that falls under the seventh commandment is usury. Usury is something that oftentimes gets not thought about, I guess, if you would. Usury is the lending of money or lending of an item to another person at an unreasonable interest rate. So it is common practice for a bank or anything like that to lend money. And it is known by lending money that over time, if you have not paid back, that you will accrue interest on your loan that is given to you at a certain percentage. Yet if the interest that is gained is very disproportionate, there's an act of injustice done by a person or a business in exacting that level of interest. If that interest is so great that it really is disproportionate to the amount of money loaned, then it is what we call usury and is unjust and violates the seventh commandment. Also, violating the seventh commandment is not giving what properly belongs to someone what they've earned. So withholding wages from an employee is something that violates justice. They've done their share, they've done their work for a wage, and therefore an employer is bound to give that wage, and to withhold wages is the same as to steal wages, and so therefore must be given. Possession of an item is something in and of itself that sometimes gets a little confusing. There are three ways in which we can possess something. We can possess something in good faith. If an item belongs to me, it is mine, then I have good faith in possessing that item. the shoes that I'm wearing on my feet right now, I know that I bought them with my own money, so therefore I have every right to possess them. They are mine. They belong to me. I'm in good faith in possessing those that pair of shoes. Good faith could also apply to if we, through no fault of our own, possess somebody else's property and have no way of really knowing that. We'll use my shoes as an example again. If I put my shoes down and then somebody also had the exact same shoe with the exact same size foot and came and took their shoes off and placed them next to mine, and then they walked out, or then I came down and went to put my shoes on and I took the other person's shoes, I have no way of realizing that they weren't mine. They're the same size, they're the same shoe, they look exactly alike. I'm possessing now somebody else's item, but I have no real way of knowing that I had taken the wrong item. And so I'm in good faith in possessing that. There's nothing wrong. I'm not sinning in any way by having those things. Doubtful possession is when we're not sure if we have a right to possess an item. And if we have doubtful possession, we have to do our due diligence to clear up the doubt. So, for instance, if I am in a if I'm in a cafe and I see that the in between my table and another table there is $50 bill sitting on the ground, I hadn't paid attention to what kind of money I had in my pocket, and it is between me and another person, I don't know whether it's my money or if it's the other person's money. And so therefore, I have doubtful possession when I pick that money up. I don't know if it's mine or not. And I have to clear up that doubt. So I should ask that other person, did you drop this? Does this belong to you? And if they say yes, then I hand it over to them. If they say no, then I can, by all means, I've cleared up the doubt. I can assume that it's probably mine now, unless there's something else to cause a certain amount of doubt. If I come across an article that I think may have been stolen by somebody, you know, somebody comes and brings me a really nice, stereo, say. And they give you the stereo, and you're like, oh, gee, thanks for the gift. And you're looking at it, and it has, you know, kind of like scratches from use on it, and, you know, initials in the back of it from somebody that owned it, written in marker. You don't know that if I should be able to possess this item, and the person that kind of gave it to you is a friend that doesn't always have the best moral compass on things. You start to wonder if it was something that you rightly can possess or not. You have to try to do what you can to clear up that doubt of whether you can own it or not. Once you've satisfied it to a reasonable amount, if you can't or you can't satisfy it, you've done what is expected of a reasonable person to do in searching for these things, and you have come to no conclusion, then you can possess that item in good faith from there on out. Bad faith is the third way we possess an item. It is when we truly possess something that has no right belonging to us and we know it. We steal something, I now possess that item, I have no right to possess that. Someone else steals an item and gives it to us and we know that they've stolen it. A person drops, you know, the person on the other table, we see the $50 bill fall out of their pocket onto the ground. And I just think to myself, well, finders keepers, I pick it up and keep it to myself. No, that's wrong. I have to give it back to them. I have no right in possessing those things, and so I possess it in bad faith in those times. If I've done something to violate justice, if I have stolen, if I possess something that doesn't belong to me, if I've committed usury or withheld wages, then I have to make restitution for that. When we think of justice, if I asked you all to think of an image of justice, a representation of justice, most of you would think of the image that the Justice Department of the United States uses, and that's a good image to have. It is the blindfolded woman who is holding scales. Because that is true. Justice is, first off, blind. It does not matter who is violated against injustice. You know, if I steal money, but I stole it from somebody who's a really evil, wicked person, I've still stolen. It does not matter that it came from a really terrible person. And the scales always have to be balanced. If I have taken what does not belong, I have unbalanced the scales. And in order to satisfy justice, I have to replace that item back to balance the scales again. There's the principle that for this injustice and that we know of. It's called the principle, as we stated, is res clamat domino. A thing cries out for its owner. And we have to always recognize that just because we've taken something, and just because afterwards we felt bad and we confessed it, does not mean we are necessarily forgiven for that. We are bound to make restitution, if at all possible. If we've taken something and we've consumed that thing, then we need to make a monetary restitution for the item consumed. So if I stole a sandwich from a store that I was working in, I have to go and make and pay the amount back to the store that I took in that sandwich. If I am unable to make restitution right now because of the circumstances I am in, and perhaps I do not have the money to make the restitution, then I can defer it, but only can defer it until I am able to make that restitution. Then I am bound to make it again. And if I cannot find the person that I must make restitution to, then it doesn't let me off of the hook. I'm still bound to at least make restitution either to the church or to charity or something like that. I cannot still just keep what I have taken in the bad faith. One last aspect of the seventh commandment is something that oftentimes doesn't get looped in with the seventh commandment, which is the possession of a good name. A person has a right to a good name. And they possess their own good name like you would possess a pair of shoes, like you would possess a car. It is something that nobody else has a right to take away from you and must truly, necessary. You know, and what is necessary is oftentimes not what we think is a good enough excuse for it. What's necessary might be in order to protect a company against somebody that we know to have a history of stealing from a company, yes, that might be a good enough reason to say, I would watch out for so-and-so because you just hired him on and, he has a history. I know him. He has a history of doing X, Y, and Z. Or you might not want to hire him because of this. But to go and to commit acts of taking away somebody's good name, we have no right to do it, even if we think that, somebody might deserve it. There are two ways that this is done. First is through detraction. That is when we reveal something that is true about somebody, but unnecessary. You know, if someone makes me angry and I talk about the nasty things that they do, I'm detracting from that person. I am pulling away their good name. I'm making others think less of them. Oftentimes gossip falls under that category of detraction. You're saying things just for the sake of saying them, or just because you're in a bad mood, or just because somebody's done something wrong to you about that person, when you have no need to reveal those aspects of them. That is detraction, and it is sinful, is taking away their good name by telling something that's true. Worse than that is calumny. Calumny is when we take away somebody's good name by lying about them, by spreading something that we know either not to be true or we don't have evidence to be true. That is what is known as calumny, and that is as well sinful. And like any other possession, restitution has to be made for the taking away of someone's good name when we, to the best of our ability. If I, speak illly of somebody in the workplace, and I really make those people really think pretty bad about somebody when they didn't have to. I should go back and tell them, I'm sorry, I was frustrated, I shouldn't have spoken out about, you know, so-and-so. If I have taken to a means of spreading it farther and wider, say I'm detracting or calumniating somebody on an internet forum or on television or something, I should go back to that same means to try to reach as many of the same people as possible to restore their good name. Lastly, under justice, we come to the 10th commandment part of it, the aspect of what is forbidden in thought. Obviously, it is forbidden for us to desire to steal and to entertain those thoughts. I mean, they might come to us and at times, and just like any other temptation may come to us. But to really entertain that is, of course, a violation of the 10th commandment. Also, is covered under that envy and jealousy. Envy and jealousy oftentimes get confused. Envy and jealousy oftentimes are mistaken for each other, but they are two separate different things. Envy is what we most commonly think of. Envy is between two parties and a desire for something that we do not have. If I see somebody who has a really nice car, and I want that, I like that car. Well, that's not a sin because I like it and I want it. But it is sinful if I become obsessed about wanting that, or I become desirous of something bad to happen to that person because he shouldn't have it, I should. Or I think, or I question why so-and-so might have that item and I don't have it. Now I've crossed over into envy, something that is an inordinate amount of desire for a certain item. That's envious. Jealousy is really a three-party aspect and really focuses mostly on the possibility, the inordinate possibility of losing something that we already have. Jealousy usually... jealousy can take place in regards to a possession. I have something and I'm really overly guarding of that item, even amongst people that I should really trust, you know, that, you know, I don't want someone to come along and to use this item because, you know, maybe they might take it because I like it so much, they might like it as much as I do and be tempted to steal it. That's being jealous of the item I have. But most often, jealousy regards personal relationships. That I have I'm friends with this person, and I see them talking to another person, and I worry that they might end up liking this other person more than they like me, and they won't spend as much time with me. Something like that, that is jealousy. And so the difference between jealousy and envy is really comes down to envy is desirous in order to... or inordinately desirous of something we don't have, and jealousy is inordinately guarding or worried about losing what we already do have. And so that is essentially the blanket cover of justice. We always want to be just in the eyes of God. Saint Joseph was referred to as the just man. He was just in his application in the sense of strict real justice, and he was just in the application in regards to his soul. Because if we take care of the things of justice and worry about the things of justice of material possessions, then we'll be more apt to remember that ourselves, our souls, don't belong to us. They belong to God. And it is only just for us to return them back to him, and return them back to him in the most pristine condition that we can. And we do that by avoiding sin. We do that by giving honor and glory to God. We do that by praying, by sacrificing, by coming to the sacraments as often as possible. And that is how we justify ourselves. And that is how we save our souls. And the 7th and 10th commandments are an important part of that. And it's something that we should always try to embrace being just as a virtue that we hold near and dear to ourselves. May God bless you in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Ghost.